Are you ready?
Stores, leasing. Two buildings.
But we have the
one grocery store.
So we're going to see if we can come back here in the morning.
Okay. We'll call this meeting to order at 6:31. Roll call.
John Cameron, present.
Mary Hatfield, present.
Norman Plum, present.
Russ Smith, present.
Okay. And Jane is not here. All right, we have a quorum. John, could you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, John. Okay, any added agenda items? Any matters added this time will be discussed during the other matter portion of this agenda.
No added agenda items tonight, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right, has everybody had a chance to go over the April 19th meeting minutes?
Yes.
Yes.
Any changes or problems?
No.
Can I have a motion to accept them?
I give a motion that we accept.
I'll second.
Okay. Vote on that. Are you ready?
Yep. Aye.
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 Okay, number six, are there any public comments at this time? Okay. Number seven, the TGM grant presentation by Angela Planning Group and City of Lapine Land Use Code Update.
So I'm going to invite Kathy and Jamin up to the table, public comment table. And then I don't recall, I've been talking about this for a while, this transportation growth management grant that the city received. And so I probably shared the SARA report even before we shared it again, leading up for the stakeholder interviews and the Planning Commission meeting tonight. But essentially, we've got Angela Planning Group on board as the consultant. It's a grant through the Department of Land Conservation and Development and Oregon Department of Transportation. You guys probably read the evaluation memo and all of that, so I'm probably being redundant at this point. So where we're at in terms of the scope of work is the consultants, Kathy and Jamin, were working with stakeholders, interviewing stakeholders earlier today, and they'll be doing some more tomorrow. So community members from across the spectrum of interests and insights for how to move the Lapine Code forward. And then they'll be working with staff and with the Planning Commission in the coming months. And so this is sort of the Planning Commission kickoff meeting. So they've got a presentation, and I'm going to stop talking and turn it over to them. So come on up, and we've got their presentation queued up.
Well, we think we do. Have to remind me which button do I push?
It should be the one on the bottom right. And then just the one on the right will just click it through.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And then the mic should be on already.
Great.
Looks like it is.
Okay, well, I'm Kathy Corliss. I'm a principal with the Angelo Planning Group. Thank you so much for having us here tonight. We've got a brief presentation, and I'm going to give you some introductory remarks. Jamin's going to be talking a little bit about downtown and some of the initial findings that we've had with regard to the our audit of the code. And then I'll close with some kind of general thoughts that we have of the code overall, or kind of the citywide issues. And then really, we want to hear from you all. So it's about, we have questions. They're the questions we've been asking the stakeholders this afternoon. But we have to hear from you all as far as your thoughts. And they're meant to just stimulate the conversation. We don't have to stick to that set of questions, but that's the kind of information we're seeking. So with no further ado, I will start going through slides. Can everybody see these okay, by the way? Lights all right?
Put the lights down one more a little bit.
One more down.
Yeah, a little bit down.
Okay. Be the low dim, I think, should be.
We have sunshine outside, so that's okay.
Yeah.
It's
a treat, too.
These are natural lighting. Cool. That looks good.
Yeah, all right. Great. So As Corey mentioned, the city received a TGM grant, and which is great. These are competitive, and so well done to you all for successfully applying and receiving that grant. Scott Evans, yeah, there is a representative from the program, and so at any rate, the program has some very specific, what they call smart development goals, and those have to do with that connection between transportation and land use, and in particular compact urban form and walkability and so forth. So as it works out well, the city's objectives for this project dovetail nicely with those TGM smart development principles. So the project objectives for phase one, which is the phase we're in, and I'll talk about the schedule a little bit on the next slide, but phase one is to identify regulations that help you strengthen the downtown, and that is building off of that report, again, that Corey mentioned, which was the Streetscape Pedestrian Safety and Pedestrian Design Friendly Design Workshop. It was led by Sarah Architects in 2015. Did any of you participate in that by chance?
Okay.
You recognize it? Okay, good. So there was a lot of outreach associated with that project, and they did a survey of the businesses in the area, like a visual survey, not a form survey, and identified some, among other things, they identified some suggested changes for land use regulations that they thought would strengthen that corridor and make it a more successful downtown. So there are also other things that they suggested that aren't necessarily land use regulations, but we're focused on the land use regulations part of what they recommended. So there's that, and this project follows up on those recommendations. But then also, the second part of the project is for us to evaluate the overall land use regulations for efficiency, user-friendliness, friendliness for your staff to actually implement them, and so forth. And so when we talk about the land use regulations, kind of generically when I say that, I'm referring to your zoning ordinance, your procedures ordinance, your land division ordinance, as they've been subsequently amended by many other ordinances, or a number of other ordinances. So staff has sent us all of the ordinances, and we've read them and have a pretty good understanding, I think, of the issues around the code, but we're interested in hearing from you all if you have specific concerns. So that's phase one. It's this very exploratory phase. Phase two is implementation of the recommendations in phase one. So, that's hard to read. Okay, well.
You should have a copy.
Oh, good, yes. Great. Oh, good. Because there's a question for you all as a part of this schedule that I'm going to ask you at the end of the evening. So we are actually technically on task 1.4. That's this Planning Commission meeting. It's our first meeting. Now, interestingly, because of the way the startup went and your meeting schedule and so forth, we actually are all the way through in our terms of our work. We're doing the stakeholder interviews, which is task 2.3. Now, that creates a really nice opportunity because we're further along at this first meeting than we normally otherwise would have been. Originally, our first meeting would have been hi, we're just kicking this project off. We really haven't looked at anything yet. But because of the way this is working out, we actually have looked at your code and are pretty far along. But what it also gives us a second meeting to either talk more about this memo or a final version of that, or to give you an extra meeting on the action plan. And so my question to you, and you'll see that planning, your next Planning Commission, and it's listed as Planning Commission work session number one. This is meeting number one. That's just an oddity of the way the scope was written. But Scott, we could be back here on the 19th of July, in which case we'd be talking more about this memo and going into this in more depth. If we came back in August, we would have completed the first draft of the action plan. We'd be talking about that. So I thought we could go through tonight and see how you felt. If you felt like there was a lot more to talk about in the memo and you wanted more time with this information that we've presented, we'd come back in July. And we'd come back and talk to you about that before we made that task final. Otherwise, if you feel like, no, we're comfortable, go forth, do the action plan, and then come back and talk to us, we'll do that. We'll come back in August. Or whenever your schedule allows, of course.
So that's the schedule. You can see that we do an action plan, a draft. We talk to you all. We talk to the, there's a joint work session with the city council. Then we go off and do a final. And the action plan is basically marching orders for the consultants to do the next phase. So in the action plan, it's literally the actions that you want us to take to the zoning ordinance. And we'll be asking the TGM program, hey, here's all the things we'd like to accomplish. Are you guys willing to, you know, we'll estimate the cost of that. You know, okay, well, that's a lot. That's a big plate of stuff. It's going to be pretty expensive, and we're going to need a lot of outreach. And they're going to say, yeah, we can do that, or you better scale it back. But the action plan basically becomes the scope of work for the next phase. So by the time that's all final, it's our ask to TGM to say, hey, this is what we'd like to do in the second phase. This is what will become the scope of work. So this phase, kind of that exploration and setting priorities and all of those things, it's really important because once we set that scope of work in phase two, somebody goes, oh gosh, I really wish we were working on the residential zones instead of the commercial zones, or I really wish we were doing X, Y, and Z instead of this. It's like, you know, it's tough to do that because we have to amend the scope of work. So we want to get it right. We want to head into phase two with the right list of stuff. So that's what that's all about. But again, I'll come back to you at the end tonight to say, what do you think? So I'm going to hand this off to Jamin in just a second, but one of the things I wanted to do is make sure that, and it sounds like some folks are pretty familiar with the report that Sarah put out following the streetscape project, but that it had some pretty great goals, and there the goals were really following up on as a part of this assessment. This is what we looked at when we were looking at the code and saying, does it do these things? And so, again, to transform the commercial zone and downtown area, and it had a specific kind of identified map, and we're assuming that, you let us know if that's not the right area to be thinking of when we're talking about downtown, if like, oh, a year or two later, no, we think it's a different location. We need to hear that. But that area maybe transforms into this pedestrian-friendly, attractive, like that's an area where you'd have a higher design expectation for your development. And that it's a focus for tourists, but mostly for residents and for attracting folks from the region, that's a regional shopping area. And that's the way that, you know, it's drawing from the South Deschutes and North Klamath counties. That's how they had identified it. And so I think, you know, it's kind of a fundamental premise of our analysis, but if we've got that wrong or if that isn't true anymore, let us know if that doesn't still resonate. And that would be important. And I guess the other thing I would say about these is that your comprehensive plan today doesn't say anything like this about a downtown. So it just kind of talks about commercial generally. It doesn't talk about a downtown, and it might be something as a part of phase two that if you wanted to do this, we would want to put put policies like these goals into the comprehensive plan so that there's a policy foundation for the regulations in downtown if that's where you want to go, or that we change these to be the downtown you want. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Jamin to talk about some of the specific design standards and some of the issues that were identified in that project.
Sure. So thank you again for having us. I'm a planner with the Angelo Planning Group. And I'm basically going to kind of walk through, there was a good chunk of that evaluation memo that was focused on downtown design standards. And so I'm basically going to walk through it and summarize that. And you know, at the phase we're at now, we're really looking at what are some of the options and common strategies that cities use to regulate development to achieve some of the outcomes that were kind of envisioned and talked about in the 2015 Streetscapes project. And so there's a variety of ways to do this, and so we wanted to start to present those options to you and have you get a sense for what you think might be most important or what the city wants to do in particular to kind of foster that, that type of environment that we're looking for downtown. So we'll start out with some of the more, what we think are kind of some of the essential standards for design and development. And one of them is to kind of create that energetic and vibrant downtown environment you're trying to create is the building should be oriented towards the street rather than to sort of to parking lots. And so the idea there being how do we can we make the pedestrian experience more interesting, more comfortable. There's a lot of research and a lot of thought behind, you know, if buildings are brought up to the front of the street, then it creates kind of a sense of enclosure. It kind of defines the public realm. And it also just makes it a lot more interesting as a pedestrian as you're walking rather than looking at parking lots or anything of that. You might be looking at merchandise or people activity through the windows. So architectural details that are on the building, those all come really close to the pedestrian, makes it more interesting. Some ways that can be accomplished are do something like a maximum setback. So a building can't be set back further than this amount from the property line that might apply to percentage of the facade or percentage of the building. And then with that also, you want the entrances to also be close to the sidewalk and be directly accessible from the sidewalk. So there's some standards around how far the entrance can be from the sidewalk. If it's not directly adjacent to the sidewalk, then you want it to have a walkway that directly connects from the sidewalk to the entrance. So some of those things that are really oriented around kind of making it a pedestrian-friendly experience. And kind of in tandem with that is the regulation of parking in downtown areas. And a few different considerations with parking. And I think in tandem with placing the building closer to the property line and really fronting the street, then would be also requiring that parking be either in the side or the rear of buildings. So locating in those places makes it so that the developer, even if the building is set back a little bit further from the street, then that might be in front of the building, might be landscaped or have a small pedestrian court or plaza area, something that's a little more interesting and comfortable for a pedestrian, people walking and hanging out, rather than a parking lot, which can be not as appealing to look at and can be uncomfortable with cars coming in and out too, to the extent that you can put the car access to the rear and coming off of a side street rather on the rather than on the main street will make less cars passing through in front of pedestrians. So and with that also the amount of parking that is required based on the type of use. So requiring less parking in a downtown area makes sense if you're trying to create more efficient use of land, compact buildings and compact development allows you to fit more into less space, which creates more destinations within a smaller area for people to walk to. One reason to think about less parking is it also can be helpful for the economics of the development if they have to provide a lot of parking. It uses up a lot of the site that they could use for square footage of building, and so can really make that can be an incentive for developers if there's less parking they have to provide. That can also be balanced though with you consider how much on-street parking is available in the area. If there's no on-street parking, you might have to kind of rethink of that and kind of have that come into the equation. But also there could be arrangements for shared parking. So if two uses have different times a day where they use their parking, they can kind of use a shared parking agreement where let's say it's a restaurant that needs those spaces at the night, during the evening, and an office that needs it during the day primarily. They can use the same parking lot, have a legal agreement that they'll do that. So that's parking. A couple of other very kind of important, really the essential standards is one of them would be a minimum amount of glazing or windows. So the idea behind this is one of the probably the most effective way to make the pedestrian experience more interesting is allow views into activity and merchandise, you know, storefront shopping, stuff going on is really, I think, what makes a place attractive and appealing to people. And so being able to see into the buildings and see that is really important. So, you know, that might look like a minimum amount of the ground floor facade has to have windows. So it could be something like 50 or 60% has to have windows. And that encourages uses that, where you look into something interesting and really limits the amount of a blank wall that a pedestrian would be walking next to, which can be kind of boring and you know, doesn't really contribute to a nice pedestrian experience. Along with that would be weather protection. So, at a minimum, usually this is required at entrances. So, kind of creates a transition space coming in and out of the building. Make it more comfortable, hospitable. There's it's really sunny, or if it's raining, have a chance to kind of gather around. So requiring the weather protection, make sure it happens at entrances. There's also another option that could be extended to, you know, percentage of the whole building facade. So 50% of it should have some type of weather protection, an awning or some sort of thing. How much that's required, you know, can vary depending on the goals and what you think is appropriate for the district. So those are some of the kind of essential elements we think in pedestrian-oriented design and development standards to think about. But there are also some things above and beyond that speak more to the architectural design and the style of the buildings. One thing that's often required is it's called a tripartite facade. This was talked about in the 2015 report, and basically it's a lot of historic, conventionally traditionally designed storefront buildings have a base and then a middle area and then a top, and there's specific architectural features to kind of delineate those three areas. It's commonly used if you kind of look around and look at some old buildings, and a lot of them almost always have that, where they have some type of base element, then maybe a small cornice in the middle or something to delineate what the middle is, and then a cornice on the top to show that this is the top. So requiring that and allowing some variation in how it's executed, so it might look different on different types of buildings, but that basic principle has to be met is one approach. A step beyond that might be something like establishing a specific identity or style for the downtown. We put in the example image here is from the City of Sandy's development code, and they have defined the Sandy style. Other towns have done this, the Sioux Sisters, here nearby to here. This can be done by regulating a number of then things that are related to the architectural style of the building, the materials that are used, the form of the roof, whether or not needs to be certain kind of columns or articulation in the building, how that's done. That can be done through specific standards that have to be met, or it could be done through more general guidelines. It might be standards that are required, or there might be guidelines that are more optional and more flexible. So some different ways of achieving that, depending on how important that is, and something to think about for Lapine is what that style might be, and how do we want to regulate that? And an important thing to think about with this project is the zone that the downtown area is in doesn't only apply to the downtown area. So the traditional commercial zone also extends out to 97 and includes some other areas that are kind of outside of what's kind of thought of the Huntington Road downtown area. And so we would need to think about different ways of limiting or determining how widely these standards would apply. And so that could be done in a number of different ways, and I won't go through each one of them here, but it could be just writing into the regulations that the standards only apply for properties that are on Huntington Road. It could be creating an overlay or a plan district that says that in this boundary these regulations apply. So it kind of depends on how widely each of the standards really is applicable to other areas and what the goal is for other areas, and if it's within that zone, and if it's how similar it is to what the goal is for downtown. So I think that's all I had. I'm going to pass it back over to Kathy to talk a little bit more about the overall code changes.
Thank you, Jamin. Mm-hmm. So with the downtown, and again, we were building off of the recommendations that were in the SARA report, and I would say that what they said in the report was that a number of people suggested or identified an architectural theme as a potential area of interest. And it wasn't necessarily a recommendation of that report, but like something that, folks mentioned it, like that they might be interested in it. And so I think we wanted to keep that on the table. We don't necessarily, that's a big decision for the city, and I don't know that we would necessarily say, oh yes, you should do that or not. But it is something that that report said they had heard from members of the community that was interest in it. So we'll put it back to you all to let us know if that's something that it's like, oh yeah, no, or yes, we are still interested in that. With regard to the rest of the code, a lot of the, and it, I don't know if you all had an opportunity to read through the rather lengthy tables at the back of the report, and I apologize for that. It was quite a laundry list. We had some great suggestions from the city planner, who has like, oh my gosh, we need to fix this and this and this specific thing. And then we had also identified a number of items, but there were some big picture issues that I felt like rose to the top, and I guess I would suggest that potentially first and foremost among those is you have multiple ordinances, and those ordinances, as they get amended, create other ordinances, and a person would have to, if we recommend amendments, they will be amending ordinances that are amending ordinances that are amending ordinances. And somebody may eventually have a nervous breakdown. So creating a development code that is unified and that actually brings all of those ordinances up to date and puts it into a document that can be amended by ordinance and that is caught up with everything and organized into a nice, there's a very basic outline of what a development code might contain, but it's got all the same components that you have. It has zones, and it has standards that are applicable across all zones, so things like landscaping and parking. It has a section that addresses procedures. It has a section that addresses applications, and usually land divisions is either part of that applications chapter or it's its own chapter, and so forth. And then there might be special use standards, so if you have specific uses for, I know you just recently adopted standards related to marijuana businesses, and so, you know, if there's a section, special use sections, those are all nice and orderly and can be amended. And so creating a unified development code would help, I think, a lot. As a part of that, right now, the zoning, the zones themselves, be it like multifamily residential, single family residential, there's a number of different commercial zones, traditional commercial, so forth. They have, the uses are, I would call it nested, right? So the one zone will say, oh, well, you can have everything that's allowed in this zone plus these things. And then, but then it's not clear that, well, did you mean everything including the conditional uses? Are those now suddenly permitted uses? Is that the intention? Gets very circular, very fast. And so a lot of times jurisdictions move to what they call a use classification system. So you create broader use categories and you have tables in each zone. And the table for the zone says, this whole category is allowed except for this thing, and this category is allowed except for this thing or with these things. And you go through in a very, every zone, doesn't make for a shorter code, but it makes for it easier to understand code because every zone has a table and that table is complete. You don't have to go back three zones to figure out what the heck, because this one allowed everything and this one and this one allowed everything and this one and this one allowed everything and this one. So getting to, and again, it doesn't mean it'll be shorter, but it will be easier to understand. So those are some pretty big kind of organizational issues that I think you guys, there are many small corrections and changes we would recommend. There are issues with procedures that I think we have concerns that they're not, you know, the notice requirements aren't quite synced up with state law and so forth. So we need to get some things fixed. We could just do those surgical fixes. I think there's an opportunity to think about maybe doing a bigger cleanup and reorganization. And I think the other part that is a big chunk of work that I think might be worth doing is looking at the residential uses that are allowed in the residential zones and making sure that you are allowing and have standards for a wide range of residential housing types. So for example, townhouses, which are attached units that are each on their own lot, you know, potentially could be allowed by based on the density, but there's no standards for it. There's nothing that says you can have a zero setback and that you can have those, you know, obviously they're much narrower lots, so you're going to have some really wide townhouses. So, but creating that townhouse plat and allowing zero lot line development like that, it's a product that would be consistent with the densities in your multifamily zone, certainly, but it's not allowed by the way the regulations are structured. This regulation requires these setbacks and so forth. So, there's and similarly, cottage cluster housing, if you were interested in that, it would be nice to have standards to allow that. So I think there's this opportunity for a wider range of housing types that is a pretty big chunk of, and you'll see a broader discussion of that. And then again, just this long laundry list of both big and small items in the tables, and including some suggestions related to compliance with the transportation planning rule. There's a table that talks about things that should be done there. There's inconsistencies between the land division ordinance, your transportation system plan that should have been corrected when your transportation system plan was adopted, but it looks like maybe didn't get made. So got some things. That's the bottom line. But there's some things that we've identified. I don't know if you have questions, if you saw anything in there that you had questions about, like what does this mean, or you know, any kind of specific questions. But if not, I will move on from that to our questions of the night. And these, again, were the questions that we were talking to our stakeholders today and we'll be talking to stakeholders tomorrow about. And again, meant to just get conversation started. We'd love to spend whatever amount of time you guys are willing to give us tonight hearing from you about barriers, like what do you think the barriers are? What's been your experience here? What do you think's working well? All of these. And I'll leave it to the commission, the chair, to decide how you'd like to do this. We can go around and take turns, do it as a group, keep it super informal.
Okay, I think that we could just go down the line here and ask our opinions on these questions. You hit some of the major points that I see can be a problem. Starting with myself, I think the major problem is the 97 Huntington corridors. We don't have a downtown street. 97's too busy. Mm-hmm. And Huntington, I don't think there's enough property on it to really develop a streetscape type downtown core. That's the two biggest areas I think that are a problem. It's kind of, our businesses are kind of spread out, and this is not unlike other little cities. They're spread out, and what do we do about it? You'd love to have like a 23rd Street in Portland, you know it. Everything's on one street and everything's right there and you can get anything you want with ample parking, but it's very hard to develop something like that. But there's a need for it here. The businesses could use a little bit better display, and the people could use a little better access, which is tough to do now. And I said, this is not anybody's fault, it's just times have made it what it is.
Yeah.
But the rest of the board, John, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it seems to me that a lot of this is going to be based on new business, growth, new buildings. I mean, we have what we have here, and, you know, it's the hand we've been dealt. And I can't see that, you know, it's not going to be any easier retrofit. So for me, a lot of, I mean, it's like, from what your presentation has shown, it certainly seems like all good stuff. But I think it's the implementation part of it that's going to be the toughest. I think, you know, having tables and so forth where everything is delineated, that gives us something to point to, certainly, as the commission, you know, we can say, well, this is, you know, if there's any dispute about something, having it nailed down that way is good. But again, downtown La Pine is, I'm not sure really what it is. I mean, when you think of downtown La Pine, what do you think of? I think of, I don't know.
97,
you think, 97?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I kind of think Huntington a little bit more so.
Well, you've got Weimark. That's one anchor point down there.
Yeah.
You've got Ray's, which is a grocery store. You have two grocery stores right here on 97, Ray's on 97, and you've got the Dollar Store over here. Now, one of those grocery stores is brand new. The Dollar Store is all brand new. And then we've got ShopSmart there. On Huntington, there isn't, unless I'm wrong, I don't think there's a restaurant in the whole place. Any place on Huntington. So when you're saying about talking about going outside and having lunch or something, where are you going to get it?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
So, real quick on that note, St. Charles is under construction. When you talk of anchor points.
Yeah.
We do have a site plan application that's in the queue for a proposed restaurant. I mean, we can't control when it's built and when it is open, but it would be right on Huntington. We also have the Transit Center property, which is going to be coming online hopefully in the next couple of years. And ultimately, I do think it's hard to keep this in mind, but it will take decades for the groundwork that we're discussing right now to like you said, John, fill that gap. Anything we put in place, it's not retroactive. We get that. Right. But with the pace that development is occurring right now, it could happen faster than you think. And to bridge the gap, we do already have in place the tool of the Urban Renewal District. And so whether it might not be a full building renovation to get to the,
tripartite. three-part building.
I would expect that this time next year we could have a storefront facade program in place to help buildings renovate. So there's ways to, and it will be a patchwork thing for a long time. We see that right now with sidewalks, you know. But so I hear all of you, and this is kind of a mental exercise in creativity and and long-term thinking. But I would say the vibe I get is, we have to build that walkable downtown. On Huntington, you're right. There really isn't a restaurant right now. There really isn't a lot to walk, and things are spaced out. It's not really a walkable, friendly place. But the improvements on First Street and some of the things we're trying to do is looking that direction.
Well, you know, and on the bright side, there isn't as much on Huntington today, but there are opportunity sites. For some cities that we work with, everything's pretty well built out, and it's maybe not built out in the way they'd like, and so they don't have a lot of new development opportunities. So for you all, it's like, well, it feels like, oh, it's stretched out, but it's got the potential. So if you put the regulations in place for new development to be built a certain way, you at least have land that's gonna apply to, right? Because it's not all built out.
And we do have the park.
Yeah, you have the park, right? I mean,
which is
I think it's got more potential maybe than is immediately obvious. Mm-hmm. I worked on similar regulations for downtown Madras about more than 10 years ago now. And every time I drive through it now, I can see the new buildings that are in compliance, and I can see Madras changing, you know, and I mean, you know, yeah, it takes a long time, but I can see that the changes incrementally. You know, again, that started out with, right, we're going to require buildings to be built to the street and, you know, address the sidewalk in a traditional way, because we want, not everywhere in the city, but in this part of the downtown, we want to create that feeling. And it's happening slowly, but it does happen. It can happen over time, and it's an exercise in patience for sure. But as far as challenges go, you're right. I mean, there's definitely challenges for the downtown, just because, you know, there isn't a historic downtown that you're starting with. But it's an opportunity too, you know, not entirely a negative. As far as the rest of the city goes, as far as development in other parts of Lapine, do you have anything that you think is a particular concern or challenge to the kind of development that you'd like to see?
Are we talking commercial development now?
Doesn't have to be. Could residential, commercial, either, industrial, if you so inclined to talk about that. It's open.
I think parking is going to be a big thing if whatever we do downtown. The way
Even over here at the Dollar Tree and grocery store, grocery outlet. You know, you drive in there, and we thought we had plenty of parking in there, and we still get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
People are on the street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, hopefully that will calm down after a bit. But, you know, I think this area is going to grow. The question is, how do we make it grow the way we want it to?
That's the...
Mm-hmm. And that comes down to, yeah, it'd be nice if we could put up this facade out there, you know, of the walking downtown. But I just drove down Huntington today, took a look at both sides, and I said, you know, actually for development, we already developed here except for about 3 lots. And that's it. For new development, there are old houses down there that have been converted into very nice places now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we aren't going to tear them down to put up a new one, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got 3 banks down there. You know?
Yeah. Kathy, I think an interesting point was when we walked around, we saw a number of deep lots, mm-hmm. the buildings significantly set back, so, you know, maybe 40, 50 feet set back. And we had some just off-the-cuff discussions about there's enough depth on a number of those lots that you could foresee some sort of a lot split almost, so you could create some frontage and create some newer buildings on that front, but still keep the existing ones in the back with the right incentives and the right code.
I mean,
that would open up a number of additional lots.
Right. So infill opportunities where you're kind of filling in or adding buildings or expanding buildings that are there.
But that's going to be nice to have your table, so to speak, and say this is loud on this zone.
Yeah.
And so people would know that they could divide it out. It could have parking in this area. You know, it would help to make it more tailored to what the zoning is, to what that property is zoned, and explain exactly what can be done on that property, because it is confusing now.
Yep.
Imagine you get a lot of questions about what can I do with this, what can I do with that. It is vague at times.
I think one of the other things we have to look at in Huntington is parking.
Yeah.
Because there is no on-street parking per se. I mean, people do it. but there really isn't on-street parking. And the road isn't that big.
And there's things in the back of buildings where you can't park in the back. There's other buildings.
Mm. Yeah. Now the cross section for Huntington has on-street parking.
The TSP cross section.
Yeah.
Yes. So future. So there's future development. We would require a wider cross section of Parker Road Street. But yes, it existed today.
Right, it's now, there's something
there. May be a few pockets that have developed to that.
Mm-hmm. But usually, you will find anybody who parks in any of those places gets yelled at. Here comes parking.
The prime spot.
Yeah.
And I would think about on-street parking. It's 85 degrees out right now, but in January or February, you know, on-street parking with snow plowing, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's going to be
a challenge.
Yeah, and it is an essential element to, if you want to create a walkable downtown. On-street parking helps because it helps those merchants. They are going to want at least some spaces right in front of their front door. You know, obviously, you have a street like Northwest 23rd where, yes, there's on-street parking, but like my chances of actually parking, expecting to park right in front of me is zero. Zero. But that's a sign of success, right? I mean, there's a lot of people that want to be there.
That's a good indication there that they've created a lot of little niches just half a block away.
Yeah.
To create quite a few parking places.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right. And
you just got to know about them and they got to be.
Right. And it's a sign that people want to be there because there's a lot of demand, right? I mean, there's no shortage of people that like one of those parking spots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's a sign of success in one way. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's a lot of parking and there's ample, you kind of wonder about the place, like, well, doesn't anybody want to be? It's a bad sign, right? So,
I think one other thing, I just want to throw this out there, is we have to, it's not on Huntington, it's next row down, where we have the Prairie House.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they don't even have a sidewalk, so they can drive their scooters down to get to Weimar.
There's no crosswalk either there for. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think that mm-hmm. is something yeah. that should be inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we've got places down there, Grange, which is probably a historic place right now.
It is.
Yeah. And there's
we can take advantage of that if we expand out from Huntington and start looking at what about this street here.
Yeah, I definitely see Morrison and then all the east-west streets that connect Huntington and Morrison as an extension of Main Street and of downtown, and there's actually a lot of vacant lots on Morrison.
Oh, yeah.
So depending on if the problem is it doesn't get very much traffic. So if you want curb appeal or not curb appeal, but visibility, that might be a deterrent. But in the future, I totally think you're spot on, Russ.
And if we develop it accordingly, we can actually put more traffic down there. But with the idea that we've got to make sure that Prairie House people can get down back and forth and not get killed on the way, or nobody wants to run over Granny on the sidewalk. It's just a good idea. Very tacky.
Any more thoughts on barriers? I was going to ask you if there were things you thought were working well.
It can seem somewhat overwhelming, the whole concept of it all, but it's a great opportunity where we have a great opportunity to really create what Lapine becomes in the next decades. And in keeping that carrot out there, this is a long-term thing. And I grew up in the Bay Area of California, and I saw so many small towns that had to go through dramatic growth and, some of it out of control, and everybody was doing, crazy stuff. No procedures, no ordinances, just make it so, And I don't know, there's a lot to think about, and I'm But again, I think that it's a great opportunity. We should look at it as a true benefit that we're able to do this.
And I think if, for someone that's lived here for a very long time, that we've come a long, long ways and stuff from having just the highway center for the only grocery store to having right. three.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Now we've got around that.
Yeah.
If we get from
Yeah, so, I mean, we've come a long ways, and I think if being smart like we're thinking about doing, I think we'll do wonderful things for La Pine. We've got a plan.
I agree. I mean, I you know, I am amazed at like how much you've accomplished since you've been an incorporated city, and, you know, I mean, really, I mean, it, while there's work to be done, there's been so much hard work that's gone into it, and... You know, it shows, and I think, you know, reading the ordinances and thinking about it, it was like, well, okay, that's generation one. Now is the right time, you know, is a good opportunity to say, we've had 10 years. Like, let's get the next generation based on what, you know, lots of opportunities to know. You have used them and learned from that. And then, to see there's still a chance to make a difference here. It's not all... fully developed and kind of fixed.
And so, getting three red lights in La Pine, I mean.
One man's dream is another man's nightmare. Yeah.
I wish they hadn't taken them.
So, but are there particular developments where you feel like you guys like, wow, that turned out great, really got it right. I mean, you know, this building looks terrific, by the way, and I'm sure there must be others that you're just like, wow, we'd love to see more of this, or anything like that. And you don't have to name names. I don't want to put anybody on the spot. So.
It seems to me that a lot of the new buildings, I mean, well, like this one, I mean, they're great. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, sort of use this type of thing as a model. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But, it's one thing about La Pine is you've got the full range of that's a business to wow, that's a business. I mean, you know, and I think the same thing with some of the homes. It's like, and then there's, you know, absolute beauty. But
and they're on the same street.
Yeah, exactly. Next door to each other. Yeah. But. So I certainly can see that yes, there are developments that have worked, and you know I've only been here for even 2 years now, and I think when I came through the first time 20 years ago, I think there was Taco Bell. Was it Taco Bell there?
I don't think it was the
Taco Bell. Wasn't here 20 years ago.
Well, was that my stop somewhere before I went to the camera?
The only thing that was here was. A little Sugar Pine had where you could get ice cream at the window, and they had Harvest Hut. That was the only two fast food things we had in La Pine 20 years ago.
See, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Bottom line is, I mean, okay, so 20 years, things have changed.
And look how many fast food we've got now. You've got Taco Bell, McDonald's, Subway. I mean,
I'm still waiting for the Starbucks and Chipotle.
Yeah, all the peaks.
Along with this too, we have to don't forget the residential. And if you have to have a good residential plan to support that,
right?
And that's one area we do need work on.
Yeah,
I think both wise and future planning, which everybody's aware of. It.
How do you? What's your? You know, I'd mentioned like allowing a wider variety of housing types, like townhouses or accessory dwelling units, having standards. For those, I mean, do you think the community is open to that at this point?
We're already opening up that with our development down there.
Mm-hmm.
By the senior center, we're putting in, 32 new houses down there?
Housing Works.
Yeah.
Housing Works. And yes, I think they're very open to it.
Yeah.
With proper control.
Right, the right standards.
But I mean, it's far better than having another hate to say another trailer court opening up on somebody's backyard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you look around the city, there really are not a lot of multifamily options right now. Whether it's whether it's apartments or whether it's townhouses or anything like that, other than a single family home, right. Or like you alluded to, a trailer park or a mobile park.
Really. And we do have those. I mean, we have four of them right over here. And, you know, and they are actually built out to the max right now. Mm-hmm. So we do need to plan for the future somehow, mm-hmm. or not just housing works, but more of that. Mm-hmm. We haven't gotten there yet.
Some nicer, as you say, upscale maybe. Yeah, townhomes, mm-hmm. things like that.
I think we've got a lot of townhomes. I think we'd work it down here.
Mm-hmm. And we've got Crescent Creek, all the housing development there. That's, if we're coming down Huntington, it looks really nice. As you're coming down, if we're thinking of Huntington being our main thoroughfare, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a good start. Mm-hmm. And the library and all the things that are down that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, one other thing that we also have to look at is the fact that we've got Kegels sitting out there.
Yeah.
And if we could have some type of path, bicycle path, I know that's one of Dennis's pet peeves and orders, where we could actually walk or bike downtown, that would connect two sections of the city.
Yeah.
And we really do have two different sections.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, with 45 acres in between?
Yeah, if we could come down right behind the Roslyn School and put a bike path down all the way into town, mm-hmm. and go right to Bi-Mart.
Yeah, I'd use it.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot more people would use it, and a lot more bikes would be involved, and I think that's a great way to work. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole idea of people move here for the great outdoors, if they could walk someplace without... Mm-hmm.
You guys want to just roll in a TSP update?
Yeah.
It's fine with you. We need to get it in the transportation system plan. We need to do an update on that. But we just got a new bike, guys. Let's put it to work. Right. Come through.
He's a civil engineer for crying out loud.
Yeah. And a volunteer, right? We know how to.
That's right. Know how to get your money's
worth. Bring the most out of our volunteers.
Good. And we've kind of touched on some of these other questions already, but I guess I'll just loop down to kind of more like regulation specific issues. And I don't know, Tammy, you want to say want to share any thoughts on your experiences so far?
Where to begin? I think that Kathy hit on that very nicely at the beginning, that we do have, you know, we have regulations in place that were a good starting point. And it's time to combine them into one to make it clearer, make it cleaner. A lot of the requirements that the criteria for reviewing, say, site plan, that don't necessarily come to you all on a routine basis, but there are a lot of them that are very discretionary, the decisions right now for site plans I'm writing are turning out to be 35 pages long for something that shouldn't be 35 pages long, and it consumes way too much time and budget. To do that, so that's one area that I know that you all don't dig into, but you read it when you're starting to research things, and sometimes some of the criteria are duplicative, and you're constantly saying, well, I already addressed that three times already here, so I think really making them more concise and clear and clean for everybody, from my perspective, from the staff side, would be extremely helpful. And just even the organization that Kathy touched on too, for anybody coming in, we have a lot of folks that come to Lapine that have never developed before and want to start their small business, want to start a new building construction, and they don't have a clue where to begin. And then how would they? And then, you know, that's not their job. But having a very disjointed ordinance that then refers to amended ordinances, makes it almost impossible. So from a high level is what I would love to see for all of us. But there are obviously a lot more specifics that are in that memo that are in table format of
of things that I've seen. From your perspective, it would be interesting to know from, you know, when you start digging into it, what are the first things that you see as confusing? Because I know that there have been, we've got folks on this panel now that really research their packets, which is awesome. Because, you know, Russell come in and say, you know, look at some technicalities and think, wow, how did he pick up on that? You know, that's not something that a lot of folks will pick up on. But,
yeah.
But these guys and gal, soon to be gals, are ones that do dig into those details. So that's probably a longer discussion we have time for tonight, but it would be great to hear what things you found to be
confusing.
It
would be nice. I've got to admit, I have yet to read all the way through all the zoning laws.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's horrendous. And it's repetitious. If you skip one, you say, oh, damn, five pages down the road, you say, I missed that one.
Mm-hmm.
So try to read these things. But we've got a typewriter here, so.
Well, I mean, handy. It's consolidation, though. I mean, it's just this.
It has to have a logical way. And when we put the thing together, I've been here for 12 years. Went to the first meeting when we were trying to become a city. And I have watched this place go from a frontier town to a city.
Yeah.
And it has been a long, hard road. I mean, there's been a lot of sweat and blood that's gone in here, but it is now time to streamline and get this thing up to code.
Yeah, I think, I mean, again, you know, starting from scratch is always challenging. You kind of grab what you can get, you get it started, and you get
we
going, and then you,
that
yeah.
we can live with right now, but 5 years from now, I don't want to live with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but I think rewriting that becomes more important than worrying about the streetscapes right now. You know, if that makes sense. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to be negative about this whole thing, but
mm-hmm.
I can't see redoing Huntington physically until we get our paperwork streamed out.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. You know, again, this depends on what you all end up deciding belongs in the action plan and what the TGM program feels they can fund, but you know, it's possible that the what could happen would be at the end of the project, at the end of phase two, what the city council is adopting is a new development code, and part of that new development code are standards for downtown, but also fixing all those other things. Like, that's kind of like, right, so it's solving, like, in adopting it, it's here's this new development code that incorporates, you know, all of our existing codes and cleans them up and reorganizes them and fixes where they need to be fixed, and then also adds in this new standards for the downtown that maybe feel appropriate for
right.
that section that you think is the right place, and whatever other additional standards you feel might be necessary, be it townhouse standards or, you know, accessory dwelling unit standards, things like that. So, I mean, there's, you know, then it becomes this new package, and it supersedes then. So the adoption of that becomes, okay, this is our new land, our unified development code, and we're going to, it's basically superseding all of those prior ordinances, and it has it's the full meal deal, if you know what I mean. So, I mean, that's one possible, like that, again, that's you all deciding that that's what you want to do, and that priority for getting the code cleaned up is more important than, you know, but also doesn't preclude this other thing, depending on funding.
It doesn't say we aren't going to do that.
Yeah.
What it does say is let's do it in a logical fashion
mm-hmm.
and we can all follow.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, you know, you mentioned the trailer courts and the manufactured home courts. I can guarantee you if you walk over there with the zoning board idea, and do an inspection on that place, I can guarantee you there are violations right, left, and in between, because that's the way they've always been. And they've been here for 20 years. And it's not to say they're bad.
Right,
you know,
right.
I'm not
no,
saying they're,
yeah.
this is bad, this is good, or anything else. They aren't standardized.
There actually probably are very few standards in your code that apply to them, so they're probably not in violation. At least not of the zoning ordinance, because there probably aren't any.
The total population of this downtown area, that's where they are.
Yeah.
Where a lot of them are.
Yeah. That's a very good point. I mean,
and we've got to be concerned about them too, because they are a lot of people for the pine.
Right, and I think it's a great, I mean, there's no reason that that can't be a really good resource for the city in terms of affordable housing and senior housing, and, you know, I don't think there's an issue. I think there aren't any standards today with regard to manufactured home parks. Yeah.
No, very much. Most of them are RV parks.
Oh, okay.
It is labeled as mobile home and RV parks, but it's really just RV parks. Okay. They have references.
Could you talk about the discrepancy about how it is defined? Wasn't there some kind of a discrepancy between the state and then the commercial zone and how it's allowed in mobile?
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, there's some state statutes stating that mobile homes are not allowed in, say, a commercial zone. I think for the intent being that you don't want to isolate them and stick them somewhere that's not suitable for residential, but since that, there's been, you know, commercial mixed use and this idea of integrating residential and commercial, and so we've got some discrepancies there that haven't become an issue yet, but on the borderline, we've had some inquiries about some CMX properties wanting to do some mobile home parks or tiny home parks that it just doesn't quite mesh. But on the code, I see it in kind of two buckets, and there's more, but from on a day-to-day basis, I think there's two buckets. There's the one bucket of maybe it being old-fashioned and outdated with, say, 20-foot setbacks in the front yard instead of the building being up on the front. And then there's that bucket of, wow, we just got a really big hole here. For example, the variance code. We've got minor variance defined, a major variance referenced, but then only criteria to address a minor variance. So when you're set to review a major variance, you kind of don't really have a lot of criteria. And so it's a little backwards. So I think there's two pockets that will, and that they've identified very quickly by just looking at the code, that will help us immensely.
Yeah. So I you're right. I mean, there's some that we would call policy neutral, right? So that means that if you applied today, and the rule said you could have a single family house this big, this tall, this, that, you know, at the end of the, if it's a policy neutral code amendment, it just says, yeah, we're going to clean up the code, but the outcome that you got before the code and after the code are the same. We didn't affect the outcome. So we call that policy neutral code amendments. They're cleanup things. And they can be elaborate, right? They can be like wholesale rewriting of whole sections, but they don't change the outcome. And they can fix gaps where the code is just silent, doesn't give you process things. But then there are substantive changes, policy changes, like creating standards for downtown, if you want to do that. And that's kind of more, like, again, it has, where there would be policies in the comprehensive plan that say, we believe in having a downtown in this location, and we're going to do, our codes do something about that. And so that's a policy choice that's a little bit different than the patch and repair things, and I'd like to think that it's possible. I mean, we don't want to take anything off the table right now. We want you guys to be thinking about it all and letting us know, and then as we move into the action plan, and again, as you think through what you would like to kind of put in your ask to DLCD, it's like, oh, okay, well, this is all the things we'd like to do, and then let them say whether they can fund those or not, and then if they say no, we can figure out what's the priority. But at this stage, I think we'd like to, you know, we're asking the stakeholders, tell us what you're thinking, and you guys too would like it to be open-ended, not narrow it down too soon, which is why our memos are getting voluminous. There's a lot to talk about. So I don't know if anybody has anything else to add for the good of the order, and I don't want to keep you here all night. Let me know when you're comfortable with, or if you have more to share. And then the last thing I guess I'd like to know is, do you want to come back and talk about this memo in more detail and specific, like, we could spend serious amounts of time talking about some of the specific ideas in here and in these tables, or if you'd rather, we can kind of take what we've heard so far and try and craft an action plan based on that, a draft, and then let you have a look at that.
What have you heard so far?
Well, what I've heard so far is priorities on code cleanup, and so the code amendments in here that are emphasizing code cleanup stuff, like fix it, the broken parts, are important. And on the downtown, I guess I would like a little bit more guidance as to where you all would like to be, and then we have more stakeholder interviews tomorrow. So, I mean, I think there's room to talk more about this if you feel like you want to do that. If you'd like more time to think about it, and we could come back and talk about this. I think there's definitely more to talk about here. But
right.
If you don't want
to, I don't think you want to ignore that downtown. Like you said, it'll take a while. Yeah. We have to lay the groundwork for it now.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to do that and incorporate some of the new codes that might have been affecting.
Okay.
And I think that would feed into the codes themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are we going to do this?
As you said, townhouses and whatever.
Okay. Well, are there? Did anybody hear anything that you're like, oh, I think that's a. I know I've heard parking. We'd like to think about, and the memo mentions like requiring less parking in the downtown. But I've heard concerns about not having adequate parking. And I know that you have a lot of your folks are coming here from outlying areas, outlying rural areas, so they're coming by car. And so having a good pedestrian system in parallel with adequate parking is probably important to you. I think...
Just a little background on that. Mm-hmm. Our medical center, we just expanded that down there.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
We had a lot of heartburn because we were going to cut off part of their parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they insisted upon having more. And for very good reason. A lot of these people are coming in from outside.
Right. Yeah.
We've got Klamath County coming up here.
Yeah. So I think as far as the action plan goes, there are tools that we can use that don't necessarily reduce the amount of parking required, except if somebody can, like it lets somebody count on-street parking spaces that are in front of their property. So if you're like, oh, well, we're calculating the amount of parking that's required for this development, and it says you need 50 spaces, but you have 10 on-street parking spaces in front of you, you can count those 10. And you can share parking with your neighbor if you can show that they have different. So you don't have. So if you don't have room for 50 parking spaces, but you want to do this development, there's ways that you can work around it without necessarily reducing the amount of parking that you're required.
Sort of like Seco does with the Espinelli, where they have the restaurant and they have a big clientele. So at night, the other shops are closed, so they use all that parking.
Yeah, yep. Right. And that just takes an agreement. And that's a really nice way to get the most use out of the land, you know, because parking, it's not a very high-value land use and from a tax-based and improvements perspective. Right, you guys want to make sure you're getting good, efficient use of the land. And so, allowing people to share is really efficient. And letting folks count on-street parking can be really efficient without automatically just blanket reducing the amount of parking. And then I think maybe looking at some of the uses to make sure that the amount of parking is really dialed in. Because sometimes it can be overly high. And you go, wait a minute, how can I be requiring them to have, that's just too much parking, you know? So having a way for people to adjust downward and, you know, show that they don't need that much is sometimes really helpful too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems to me that parking is one of these good problems to have. Yeah. I mean, if you have parking issues, that means you've also got some thriving businesses.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Mm-hmm. You got a problem with popularity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would rather solve, you know, if filling the businesses, filling the lots, and then having to work with the parking. But
You know, one way of doing that too is to think about the public trying to work on a district-wide park, shared parking of some sort, you know, some lot that's kind of off of the there, or even
your
structured parking.
Your transit lot comes to mind.
Yeah, yeah, that's a park there and walk from there.
Yeah, especially if the downtown is fairly compact, you know, if it's the parking somewhere close and it's friendly to walk, and people will generally do that.
We have our bike trail down there.
No, it really is. I mean, yeah, it's a combination of having the connectivity of the pedestrian amenity, whether it's a sidewalk or a path.
Then we'll have to have the snowmobile track.
Oh, fun. Cross-country skiing.
Anybody else have any other questions? So we're going to crush it to code.
Yeah. So I
code, and then keep the downtown area in our minds. Use it for the thinking on it and talk about that at a later date. Right?
Yeah. Now, would you like me to come back and with us to come back in July and talk about this, or would you like us to wait and come back with a new, like, revised?
I'd come back with a revised.
That's fine. You feel like that's okay?
Yeah.
Okay. July's just, so we'll be back in August probably.
Okay.
August meeting.
All right.
Okay. Fantastic.
So is there an end date to
have
this whole thing done?
Oh.
Yes, I'm on this guy.
Drop dead.
Yeah. Well, this is phase one. We'd like to have it done by the end. And again, at that point, we'll have been in front of City Council with the final action plan, and they will have said, yes, this is the action plan that we want to go forward with. So there's process for you guys to kind of take a couple of looks at this. And then if they are contented, if the program says, yes, that all sounds good, that creates that scope of work. And we start in the new year with phase two, which is actually writing. So then you're really gonna be sick of us. We'll be coming to you with reams and reams of, like, okay, here's the new chapters that do this and the new sections that do this and the new, you know, and it's, you're going to have to bear with us. It can be dry, but yeah, but it is really important. So we'll be out. So that would all start to happen in 2018.
But one thing I would suggest doing was including that one extra road down there.
Okay.
As well as the
Morrison?
Yeah.
Well, if we did it even by the commercial zone, that captures Highway 97 as well. I mean,
think we would want the same standards on the highway.
So then it would need to be back to your options on page.
Yeah.
You know, would it be an overlay zone?
It could be an overlay zone, or it could be, one thought I had is you have a neighborhood commercial zone that's only used on it's like a mixed use, I think it's mixed use NC. It's used up in the master plan area. It's a little tiny.
Oh, yeah, you
talked
about within the Newberry planned area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see that there's a little, this.
The little purple dot. Yeah.
Is it purple? Or
yeah.
Line? Okay. This one. Is that? neighborhood commercial?
It's really only codified in the Newberry neighborhood.
But it's kind of an interesting zone. So one thought I had as I was looking at, like, instead of creating a new zone or an overlay, is could we, are some of the same goals for that zone similar to this area? And maybe the solution is modifying that zone and then applying that to the portion of the downtown that you want these standards to apply to. So, I mean, there's I'm probably going too far down that rabbit hole, but there's lots of ways to solve for that. We can figure out the most efficient, cleanest way in your code to do it without adding lots of volume and complexity. But yeah, I was like, oh, well, you've got that zone. That could, if we tweaked it, we might be able to get that to work and then add some standard. Anyway.
No, I think that I think your point, Russ, and I think that's a good consideration is, what kind of, how broad, how wide of a net do we want to cast in terms of thinking about that? I mean, Huntington makes a lot of sense. Morrison makes a lot of sense. What about all the lateral streets, you know, first, third, fourth?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a year from now, there will be at least four, maybe five new crosswalks across the highway with, you know, pedestrian refuge islands and two raised rectangular flash beacons, yeah, to get pedestrians across the highway. So are we talking about when 4th hits the highway on the other side, it turns into William Foss? Do we want this to extend that way to a little ways as well, or is it all on just the west side of the highway?
We don't have to do it all at once. We could do the west side and get a good feel for this and how it worked for us, and then we can extend over to the side on the side that's 97.
We also add
too wide of a net to cast.
Yeah. Because if we try to take on that baby,
well, not. I wouldn't say very far. I would say mostly as far as kind of like the commercial zone extends,
right,
where, you know, there are commercial businesses on the other side.
Oh, yeah, so definitely, and that's where we, mm-hmm, fortunately, I think the last two buildings that went up there really did a nice job.
That one dental spot. Everything else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd just add that, you know, you can also, there was a lot of different standards we talked about, so the windows, we talked about the where the building is placed facing the street, and right, you know, you could also apply some of the, or you have all of those in one place, and then a portion of those in another place, mm-hmm, you know, so you
turn down the volume in some areas, if you know what we mean. Yeah.
Yeah, so they don't all come as a package.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate your thoughts.
Would you mind if I said just a few things?
Sure.
I just had a couple of comments.
And you are?
I'm Scott Edelman. Is a very standard here?
Sure.
I'm the regional representative, so I'm not actually with the TGM program. That's the other side of our agency. I'm with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Okay. Regional representative, there's every region has one. I cover all the way from Lake County and Klamath County up to Hood River and the Dalles, so it's pretty long stretch, a beautiful stretch. So right now I'm covering all the eastern counties too until we can hire somebody to fill that spot.
In your spare time.
Yeah. I've been involved in a number of these TGM projects, mm-hmm, since I started 4 years ago, and I've already about half a dozen. This is by far my favorite. Some planner's dream to have a blank slate, like you've been talking about. I worked in Prime Pub before that for 7 years as a planning director, and we did a similar thing. We didn't do it through TGM, but we did an update trying to look at our downtown and what we could do with the downtown. And I mean, you have gas stations there, you have drive-thrus there. You've got most of that on the highway, so that's nice. But and we have ugly buildings. If you've been through Prineville, there's the Boss Hog Smoke Shop is one of the ugliest buildings in one of the prime corners of the town. So what a cool opportunity. I love this project, and I think it's neat that it seems to be a lot of enthusiasm for it. Second, you know, the TSP update was mentioned. I think that you're in a good position for TSP update because these TGM programs, we like to stage them. So you first had a year ago or so, it was called Education Outreach, where it was just a 2-day little seminar where they came and one day interviewed people, the next day did a seminar on the downtown. Some of you might have been involved in that. Then next stage, it builds to, well, we've already invested, so, you know, it helps the case. I think the hardest case for TSP update being funded through TGM is the age of it, because, you know, we get applications for TSP updates that are 15 years old. That said, part of the justification for this one was, yeah, it's not that old of a code, but it was the first code. And you find problems with it day one. And so I think we can say the same about the TSP, that it's the new code, but it's also your first one. So I hope we can make a case for it. And the timing might work out well, because there's a TGM grant every year, and that comes in the date that I just passed in June. So if staff is interested in, you know, that might be something next summer to apply for and look into. And those programs, the nice thing about them is there's a little bit of a guilt factor with both ODOT and DLCD people. If you don't get it 1 year, put in for the next. Because we got that in Prineville. We got to reject it 3 times, and the 4th time they couldn't really put to us. It felt too bad, even though we maybe didn't score as bad. So I wanted to mention that about the TSP. I don't remember who brought it up, but the Hagel connection. I love that idea of connecting this town. The first time I tried to drive here for work, I had a meeting, and I think I was actually living in Prineville, or working in Prineville all the time, and we had some kind of meeting over here. I got to town with the directions, and I thought I was there. And I passed it, and so I turned around and went back. I tried to figure out where this meeting was, and finally figured out that there's a town stretch a long ways further. So I think that's an awesome idea. And also they're using the side streets to get to Morrison included in it. And when I think about parking, side streets are really valuable for parking. I think about Bend, Sisters. Often they're the ones that are easiest to get parking on. You can have parallel parking on through the main street possibly with the angled parking to pack more cars in on the side. So just a few comments I had about the discussion tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
Thank you.
There's a great point about those side streets. And I mean, given that Morrison is already zoned commercial, and if you didn't want traditional, if we didn't change the traditional zone to have design, many design standards, it was, you wouldn't necessarily want Morrison to develop in that, like, oh, it's going to be auto-oriented uses and drive, you know, like, if you want it to eventually be an extension of downtown, then now, yes, so that's an extension.
Well, especially since we've got an ODOT building right down there, and they're using for storage, so. Oh, that's a wild card, too, is that we're working on ODOT. They have a 10-acre maintenance yard right on the corner of First and the highway, and I'd say I'm going to call it a five-year goal to have that be ODOT yard moved to the industrial park and that site redeveloped as something.
Something.
So I mean, but that is going to that's a massive
that's an anchor site.
But they also have one right down Morrison. We got the county, the coach road.
Right. Yeah.
That's the one that's across from the high, almost across from the high school from the elementary school and the city owns that.
That's cool. Yeah.
It was a county road.
Is there another one on Morrison?
I don't know. They have my vehicles stored down there. I thought we talked to them.
Have you talked to us that little bit about that at all? About the ODOT yard?
No.
She might be a good resource. She's facilitated a few different ODOT transfers.
Really? Okay. That's a good lead. No, I just met with the ODOT folks, and BLM owns the land. So ODOT doesn't, that's one of the sticking points, but if we could have some help along the way, that'd be great. I'll reach out, put a plug in for them. And I didn't realize I was planning a seat for the TSP update, but I'll why not?
Excellent.
So.
Super helpful.
Thank you.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you
so much.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For working with you on this one.
Okay. We're on number 8, other matters. Anybody got any?
None other.
Anybody? Okay. Public comments?
Staff comments? We're busy. We're busy processing applications. We're busy trying to, as we just talked about the last hour and a half, try to get things straightened out for the future because we anticipate the applications to keep pouring it. We will be kicking off, we had another grant through CYC to do kind of a public outreach process on the transit center property. And I'd expect that to kick off in, I'm hoping, August. Should have an update for you, say, at next month's meeting. But we'll have some open houses, we'll invite the public in, we'll say, we've talked about the vision for that property and we've shared ideas of what could be on there, but we want to hear from the public, what do they want as well? And what are their priorities also will really be important. And so that should kick off, I'd say, in August, play out over late summer into the fall, so that by wintertime or early next spring, we have a really good sense of what that site's going to look like. Because when the streetscape project comes down this time next year, we're working with ODOT to get them to turn the corner, do some frontage improvements on 4th Street, but we want to try to make those work together as much as possible. So that grant will kick off in hopefully next month or August. I don't think there's, I'm sure there are other items, but I can't think of them right now.
I would just note that, as I mentioned, we've got 21, 22, probably by tomorrow, 23, 24 applications in the hopper. Anything from marijuana grow, number of different conditional use applications paired with site plan, to Gordy's site plan, a Dollar General site plan on the north end of town off of Pam Lane, just south of the Arbor Builders storage units up there. Variance application for setbacks, and a couple of different right-of-way vacations, a few lot line adjustments. So as the notices go out, they will go to you. Definitely feel like you can come in and get the record and start looking at the plans so you can comment on them. All of the applications we have right now are staff administrative decisions, but it's open to everybody to comment. So take a look at them, because there are a few big ones in there. Gordy's being one of them, Dollar General being another one. And we're trying to process them as fast as we can, but they're coming in faster than we're getting them out. But hopefully in the next 10 days or so, I can get, you know, top seven off the list out the door. What we do when we get these in, we review them for completeness, which takes a while because there's a lot of information to make sure we've got the details from. And as soon as we feel like we've got a package that's complete enough, we get out to the county to review if it's on a county roadway. City engineer Eric Huffman, myself, fire marshal. We've started sitting down with the fire marshal during the site plan review process. I think I mentioned before that the fire marshal review and jurisdiction really comes in the building permit process, but it is so essential that they weigh in at the site plan process, because if somebody puts a building down and they can't get a fire truck in there, then they're redesigning a building, they're starting over. So we've started bringing him in up front to save everybody time and money. But it adds a little more time sometimes on the reviews, and sometimes we have developers that are really, really understanding, and they know at any other city they're going to have to wait 3 to 4 months, and other developers that wonder why they can't build their sidewalk tomorrow. So we're trying to balance that. And right now we've got some patient folks that we're looking at about when they submit to getting back to them. We're at about a 60-day turnaround, which is, I think, pretty reasonable given the amount that we have going on. By state law, we've got 120 days. We'd really love not to take that long. But do keep an eye out for those notices so that if you want to look at them. It's always helpful to get more eyes and more feedback.
You said Dollar General?
Dollar General, mm-hmm.
That's not this.
That's not this one.
On Dollar Tree,
they always come in twos.
This was Dollar Tree, yeah.
And having driven back to the valley a couple times, two different routes in the last month, they're building in, I feel like, every town.
Absolutely.
In Oregon. Yeah. They just built one in Oak Ridge. I think they're building in Sweet Home. They're building in, I'm missing another one along those routes. Their Dollar General's going up.
I used
where
to work.
Where are they going? Or can you say?
Where are they
going? So, you know where the Wikia station pub is? It's just to the north. That, not that lot, just to the north of there.
That storage.
Oh, you mean right next door to it, just before, when you turn down toward Railroad?
No, not Vicks.
You know where the little storage place was? Right in there.
Yeah, it's right between Wikia Junction.
Oh, okay. That's where it is.
Yeah, and
that's where the, what space had his boat shop.
No, not
off Burgess.
No,
we're Wikia Sports, Wikia Station. Not Wikia Junction.
The bar, sorry. Going north, on the right side.
Just the lot north of that, yeah.
Dollar General is probably the biggest expanding company of that type in the United States.
They had a site selector here like almost a year ago, and she was doing some due diligence, and she said, well, yeah, that's a good question. I told her, do you know Dollar Tree is just opening up in like 6 months? And she goes, have you looked at Dollar General stock? I go, no. She goes, they know what they're doing. I go, okay.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah. The one thing I would note, just for, you know, long-term thought and where the city wants to go, is we don't have any design review criteria on the books right now for the city. And some of it may come out of this TGM grant for the downtown. But I think that's a discussion at a broader level, not something we can answer quickly. But, you know, some stores, maybe some of them I've mentioned tonight, don't have a very attractive facade. There's nothing we can do about that right now. Some cities I worked for before, I negotiated with Dollar General and said, you know what, we've got a design review and I really don't like that brown metal facade. Can you do something else? And they say, you got the code? Sure, we'll add some great facade improvements if you've got the criteria to enforce
it. If you have the code. That's why, you know,
they will do it.
You look at probably every McDonald's other than the one in Sisters, and they all look the same.
Yeah.
But guess what? If McDonald's wanted to build in Sisters, they're going to build it looking in a Western
theme. Oh, sure.
And they did. And that's an extreme example.
Yeah.
And then you have also some other developers who, you know, when someone will come down and sit and talk with you and they want to make some changes, then that's gravy, that's fine. But when you have someone who digs their heels in and they've got a cookie-cutter model, they're going to find loopholes. They're going to find every which way they can to cut
out their lawyers.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So it's a that long-term discussion, I think that the city needs to consider it at some point. And it doesn't have to be stringent, but something.
No, but I think that's a good idea. I think that that's a great idea. I think that we have a lot of work to do on the code first, zoning in general.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Tammy knows that. Huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've read through enough of her work. I mean,
okay.
Why are you being redundant?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, any other staff comments you guys get?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Planning Commission comments. John?
A lot to digest. You know, like I say, it's a great opportunity, but got to understand it first. Mm-hmm. And I think having a dartboard there, you have to have a dartboard to throw a dart. And so I guess what I'm saying is getting the procedures, getting the ordinance stuff straightened out, and just being able to refer, you know, and here McDonald's, here is the thing, you know, or whoever it is, rather than have to discover the how we're going to do it at that moment, have it already preordained in a way. I mean, obviously there's going to be variances and so forth, but I don't know. It actually, it properly done, is a lot of work, and that's what we signed on to do. So
that's why we make the big bucks.
No. Yeah, baby.
Okay. I think there's going to be lots of changes, and we're going to have to be up for it, and have to really check out what's going on, and be on board with changes, and not try to make a lot of waves when we're trying to really work through a lot of stuff. And I think you guys are doing an amazing job of trying to keep us updated with what's going on.
On that note, real quick, I think that's why, you know, the schedule might feel like a long time, say 6 months from now in December, but this is a methodical step-by-step process that, to your point, John, takes, you want to get it right, you want to think through it, you don't want to miss something.
That's a tight schedule.
That, you know, you're right.
Really is a tight schedule.
Yeah.
We've already missed the first 5 dates.
Well, they're doing the stakeholder interviews now, which they had scheduled later, so it kind of got, some of it flip-flopped, but I'm optimistic, but we'll be busy. They'll be busy.
It's a lot to take in.
It's a point to be taken that must be done right, because I think we did do a few things early on, probably in rush through, or lack of experience, I guess, mainly. So, but you guys are doing a good job. I appreciate it.
Okay, anything else? Let's have a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
I second it.
Okay, everybody, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Off the record here. Has anybody talked about the Morrison using that street?